Breaking news tonight out of Baltimore. A police officer run over and killed. Multiple schools on lockdown amid an all-out manhunt to catch her killer. And developing right now, dramatic new video just released. From Friday's shootout between a gunman and police at President Trump's golf club in Florida. Also tonight, the president's new demand, investigate the investigators. Late word tonight of a dramatic new turn in the Russia probe after an Oval Office showdown. Chilling new accounts from survivors who say they hid in a closet for their lives.
Did he seem like he was enjoying this?
Yes, he was.
Students who say they heard the Texas high school gunman taunting his victims. A new toxic danger in Hawaii as that exploding volcano starts pouring into the Pacific. And diagnosing ADHD in kids using brain scans. Tonight, the signs doctors say parents should look out for to know when a child should be tested.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome. We begin with a tense situation that's been unfolding all afternoon long in Baltimore County, Maryland. A female police officer killed in a neighborhood, the scene of an intense manhunt. Schools were put on virtual lockdown and workers and residents warned to shelter in place. The killing of the officer during an apparent traffic stop brings to 56 the number of law enforcement members killed on duty so far this year around the country. Our Pete Williams has late details.
In the air and on the ground, state and local police launched an urgent manhunt in a suburb of Baltimore, Maryland, after a Baltimore County police officer was killed.
Can you let us know if you get any vehicle description or anything?
She'd been dispatched to check out reports of a suspicious vehicle. Police say it appeared the people in the vehicle had broken into a house.
She encountered the suspects and she was critically injured. Our officer was transported to the Franklin Square Hospital, where she was pronounced deceased at 2:50 p.m.
Authorities said they were searching for as many as four suspects, men in their teens and 20s. One of them apparently got into another car, sped away, then jumped out and ran off. Though initial reports said the officer was shot, witnesses said it appeared she was actually struck by one of the suspects driving away.
My son ran in the house, stating, "Dad, Dad, a Jeep just ran over a cop in front of the house."
Residents near the shooting scene were urged to stay inside. Streets were shut down. Schools in the area delayed afternoon dismissals, holding the children inside, and told parents to stay away while the search was going on. Baltimore County Police haven't yet revealed the name of the officer who was killed. They say she'd been on the job nearly 4 years and is the first woman on that force to die in the line of duty. Lester?
All right, Pete Williams, thank you. And just in tonight, we are getting our first look at a dramatic shootout between police and a gunman on the loose at the president's golf club, the Trump National Doral near Miami on Friday. The pop, pop, pop of gunshots caught on police body cam footage, along with an alarm blaring in the lobby. NBC's Katie Beck has the tape.
The dramatic shootout between police and an intruder at the Trump National Doral Hotel in Miami. A firefight captured on police body cam. Fire alarms blaring as bullets fly, round after round. The damage visible all over the hotel's luxurious lobby, as the video shows officers carefully climbing the stairs, where suspected gunman 42-year-old Jonathan Oddie was arrested. Police say he scaled a fence at the hotel owned by the president, stole an American flag, and began screaming rhetoric against President Trump and former President Obama. Suffering gunshot wounds to the leg, Oddie survived and now faces multiple felonies, including first-degree attempted murder of a police officer. Katie Beck, NBC News.
To the White House now, where President Trump today summoned top Justice Department, FBI, and intelligence officials. The president demanding an investigation into whether his campaign was infiltrated for political purposes after reports that an FBI informant spoke to a number of Trump campaign members. NBC News Chief White House Correspondent Hallie Jackson has the story.
Spotted late today, the deputy attorney general walking into the West Wing, his agency battling with his boss, the president, hereby demanding Rod Rosenstein find out whether or not the FBI or Department of Justice infiltrated or surveilled the Trump campaign for political purposes in 2016.
I think it would be very troubling to millions of Americans if that took place.
Democrats say not so fast.
The president's claim that there was a political spy embedded in his campaign is nonsense. And the country needs to know that this is nonsense.
Rosenstein, under orders to do something, finding a middle ground, expanding an existing internal review, but not starting a new one altogether. The White House now reiterating what the DOJ confirmed yesterday, that it will ask the Inspector General to look into any irregularities in tactics concerning the Trump campaign. Rosenstein, who oversees the special counsel investigation, publicly silent on that today, but poking fun at what's become a very visible role.
Deputy attorneys general are very low profile, tend not to be recognized.
An FBI informant did speak with several members of the Trump campaign in 2016, according to a New York Times report. But experts argue it would have been standard procedure to talk to people during what was, at the time, the FBI investigation into Russian interference.
There's nothing wrong with this. In fact, it's really the least intrusive means that the FBI could have used.
Now, the president, furious and fixated, according to sources familiar with his thinking.
Rod Rosenstein is in the most difficult position probably of anybody in the history of the Department of Justice. He's trying to thread the needle between a president who's pressuring him against protecting an institution, the Department of Justice and the FBI.
The White House also says Chief of Staff John Kelly will now put together a meeting between intelligence officials and some lawmakers to review highly classified materials related to all this. Some Republicans had been pushing for just this to happen, but law enforcement officials have been very hesitant to reveal anything that could compromise a source. Lester.
Hallie Jackson at the White House tonight. Thank you, Hallie. From Santa Fe, Texas tonight, heart-wrenching stories emerging of loss and survival only deepen the search for answers following Friday's high school massacre. 10 people were killed when a 17-year-old student allegedly bursted into an art class and opened fire, taunting his victims between trigger pulls. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is there.
Today, outside Santa Fe High School, a moment of silence for 10 lives lost.
I could not have asked for a better woman.
William Tisdale's wife, Cynthia, was a substitute teacher. She'd gone back to work more than a year ago when he was diagnosed with a lung disease.
What will you miss most about her?
She was always there. Through everything. I mean, we've been through a lot.
Inside the school, as the trench coat-wearing gunman opened fire, Isabel Lamance and eight other students barricaded themselves in an art supply closet, as she says the shooter taunted his victims.
What'd you hear?
He said, woohoo. He just, like, screamed it, kind of, shouted it.
Did he seem like he was enjoying this?
Yes, he was. You could tell that he was by all the things that he was saying.
In this cell phone video, students run for their lives. You can hear three gunshots. It was recorded by Susanna Salazar, who shortly after the shooting learned her younger sister had been shot. Thankfully, Sarah Salazar survived.
She's strong. We all love her, and we were all here for her. And she's safe now.
Shayna Fisher had just turned 16. Her mother says she was the first student killed and had been harassed by the confessed shooter, Demetrius Pegorchis, for 4 months, rejecting his romantic advances. But today, his attorneys visiting their client in jail said he doesn't remember Fisher's name. Investigators have not confirmed a motive and are poring over the suspect's journals to see how long he may have been plotting the attack.
I think he still seems very confused about the incident figuring out what exactly happened.
What happened is that Cynthia Tisdale left behind 11 grandchildren and this note to her husband the morning of the massacre.
I love you. I hope you feel better today. Love, Mom.
They'd been married almost 47 years.
The sheriff says it took officers just 4 minutes to confront the gunman after the first shots were fired. After a gunfight and intense negotiations, he then surrendered about 25 minutes later. Lester.
All right, Gabe Gutierrez, thank you. Let's turn now to Hawaii as we take a look at that angry volcano continuing to explode. This is what it looks like right now. The lava flow on the Big Island has now reached the ocean for the first time flowing into the Pacific, and that is creating a new toxic danger in the air. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer is there for us again tonight.
Exploding to life, Kilauea is moving faster, spreading farther. A river of lava pouring into the ocean, where magma cascades into the water, lasers form. A haze of hydrochloric acid mixing with shards of volcanic glass, dangerous to breathe. Just like the sulfur dioxide and ash blanketing the air.
The ash is falling. It's very foggy, and the sulfur is very high right now.
With molten fireballs launching through the sky, a high-velocity lava bomb catapulted into its first victim. Mark Clausen, rushing to help his neighbor, struck in the leg.
Daryl!
His friend rushed to the hospital as Clausen stops the home from burning.
The railing had been smashed. It was about a 12-pound rock. Had glanced off the railing and obviously hit him.
With new fissures splitting the earth open, lava is rolling over a highway, cutting off escape routes. At least four more homes destroyed. Herschel Hood lost more than just his house.
We have two cats. They wouldn't leave, so I said goodbye to them. And everything else.
Tonight, a spectacular display of nature's power in the air, on the ground, and now out at sea.
And Miguel joins us now. Miguel, I know you're in a safe place, but tell me what it feels like to be that close.
Lester, you can certainly feel the heat and the power. At times, the ground here shakes. These geysers of lava are shooting more than 100 feet into the air. We're in a residential neighborhood. That's a concern. We're also less than a quarter mile away from a geothermal plant. If this met that, it would certainly be a disaster. And Lester, all of this lava is pouring right into the ocean, bringing back those toxic air concerns you spoke about earlier.
That is an incredible image behind you, Miguel Almaguer. Thank you. Now to the high-powered help joining the fight against our country's deadly opioid crisis. He already took on big tobacco, forcing a multi-billion dollar settlement. Now he has his sights set on a new target, the pharmaceutical industry. NBC's Cynthia McFadden has more in our series, One Nation Overdosed.
Attorney Mike Moore did what even his mother thought was impossible. Won a $246 billion judgment against big tobacco.
The most historic public health achievement in history.
His role in that victory memorialized in the movie The Insider, in which he played himself.
Michael Moore.
He's now putting that experience to work against Big Pharma, charging that opioid manufacturers are largely responsible for the raging epidemic.
You've called the tobacco industry the most corrupt and evil corporate animal that's ever been created in this country's history.
That's right.
What do you say about Big Pharma?
They're pretty evil. And basically, they did the same thing the tobacco companies did. They lied about the addictive nature of the opioids. And then they went out and marketed these things and told doctors everywhere, okay, it's safe. And it's created this huge opioid epidemic. I mean, there are 3 million opioid addicts out there in the country right now.
Most of whom began with prescriptions.
80% of them.
Moore calls out one company in particular, Purdue Pharma, for videos like this one.
The rate of addiction amongst pain patients who are treated by doctors is much less than 1%.
When you train your workforce, thousands of salespeople, to go out and tell doctors that there's less than 1% chance of addiction if you take this drug, and you know that there's no study that you've done and no reliable study that anybody else has ever done that says that, then of course you're telling a lie. Of course you are.
Purdue told NBC that Moore's assessment is deeply flawed, that OxyContin represents less than 2% of current opioid prescriptions, and that today's crisis is driven by illegal trafficking and abuse of heroin and illicit fentanyl. But Moore and his colleagues have already recruited 23 states to the cause.
You going to win this fight?
I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to keep kicking them until they give up.
Cynthia McFadden, NBC News, New York.
Still ahead tonight, diagnosing ADHD, the new guidance for concerned parents to catch it and treat it in young children. Also, relive the magic and the majesty with snapshots just released from the official Royal Wedding album. We're back now with important health news, a potential major leap forward in diagnosing ADHD in children. New evidence shows it's not just a behavioral problem, but a biological condition related to brain development, suggesting it can be diagnosed at an early age. NBC's Rahima Ellis explains.
I was placed on Fortnite.
Nathan Vanis was only 3 years old when his mother noticed something wasn't quite right.
You really needed to make eye contact with him to get him to listen.
By five, he was diagnosed with ADHD.
ADHD is a very real biological condition that is manifest very early on in life.
In fact, as early as 4 years old, according to a new study, researchers compared brain scans of 90 young children and found those with ADHD symptoms also had smaller brain volume, especially in the frontal lobe, the area that controls motor function, attention, and decision making.
That sounds startling and dramatic to me.
It's not subtle. It was throughout the brain.
Neuropsychologist Mark Mahone says the study does not recommend more children have brain scans, but it does suggest parents should have children tested as soon as they show symptoms, like excessive talking and extreme trouble concentrating, because with treatment, some children can manage the symptoms.
The findings do suggest that we should screen earlier for ADHD, just like we screen earlier for other childhood conditions, especially things like developmental delay or autism.
I'm happy that we finally figured out what the problem is and how we can treat it.
With therapy and medication, Nathan's improving. As this discovery shows, early intervention makes a difference. Rahima Ellis, NBC News, Baltimore.
Coming up, science tries to settle the great breakfast table debate. Are eggs good or bad for your heart? And going Hollywood, Barack and Michelle Obama cut a deal that could make them media moguls. Back with some news to keep in mind for breakfast tomorrow morning. There has been a lot of back and forth over the years about whether eggs are good or bad because of their cholesterol. But a new study published today by the BMJ journal Heart claims eating an egg a day may reduce your cardiovascular risk and cut your risk of stroke by 26%. The Obamas are coming to Netflix. The former first couple is getting into the TV game, signing a multi-year deal to make what Netflix is calling a diverse mix of content, which could include scripted and unscripted series, documentaries, or features. Over 29 million Americans tuned in, putting on a pot of coffee extra early to watch the royal wedding between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. That's even higher than Will and Kate got for their wedding back in 2011. And here's a view you didn't see. The palace releasing several official portraits, including one with a smiling Prince George stealing the show, another with the entire immediate family, and finally the happy couple beaming on their big day. When we come back, debt of gratitude, the former bill collector who switched sides to help thousands of people. Inspiring America is next. Finally tonight, it's an unfortunate reality that many Americans are just one serious health problem away from a deep financial hole. Collecting unpaid medical debt is a big business in this country. But tonight, we have the story of a group that is turning the tables on debt collection, surprising strangers with a cure for their medical financial burden, and they are inspiring America. When a medical emergency strikes, 43 million Americans are left with a different kind of trauma, crushing financial debt. For three decades, Craig Antico was the voice on the end of the line. You're the guy that had to call up and say, pay up. In a nutshell, what was your message?
Message was, you're this bill and we need to have payment.
But now, Antico is using the same expertise that allowed him to collect debt to abolish it instead. What made you want to make a difference and help people?
Well, I'll tell you, when you go to work and you're having to make 200 calls a day to people that can't afford to pay, it just wears on you. At 5 o'clock, you just want to go home. Now, I can't wait to get up.
Antico and a fellow collector started RIP Medical Debt, a nonprofit that uses donations to buy up batches of overdue medical bills from hospitals and doctors for just pennies on the dollar. So a $100 donation allows the group to wipe out $10,000 in medical bills. They can't respond to individual pleas. They use a formula to find and forgive the neediest. Reagan Adair couldn't keep up payments for migraine treatments.
It is aggravating to go out there and see that the bills are in the mailbox.
But one day, a surprise, a yellow envelope with good news. Nearly $3,200 of her debt was forgiven.
Nobody does good things when they're, you know, when no one's looking. And he's doing that. He's helping so many people.
RIP says they have forgiven more than $120 million in medical debt for more than 60,000 patients. Their ultimate goal, $1 billion.
You may get this letter out of the blue that says your debt is gone.
That's exactly right. It's a random act of kindness that you can get this letter or a call from RIP Medical Debt saying your debt is no longer due.
NBC-owned TV stations have donated $150,000 to the effort, and their viewers have donated as well, all in all erasing $40 million of debt. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.